This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stachow. Thank you. As a little girl, Leslie Isikoff had a lot of the same money-making schemes as her friends. She walked dogs, she babysat for kids in her neighborhood, but her efforts at enterprise fueled unusually lofty goals. She needed to raise enough money to buy flying lessons. Leslie was intent on becoming a pilot to fight hunger around the world. She did both those things and finally landed in Greensboro, where she continues to combat food insecurity much closer to home. Leslie is now the executive director of A Simple Gesture. It helps thousands of area families eat on weekends and during the summer when school-based food programs have ended. And she joins me now, Leslie Isikoff. Welcome to the State of Things. So, pretty adventurous kid. I mean, how long were you harboring this notion that you'd be flying into places where they needed food?
Yeah, so probably when I was about in fifth grade, I read a book about some people that were pilots and flew into Ecuador and met some indigenous people there and began a relationship with them. The book ends kind of sad. I think everybody dies in it. But for me, it seemed amazing that a little plane ride could introduce you to the entire world and create all these incredible relationships.
So would you run home and say, I want to learn how to fly? I mean, what happened next?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I ran home to my parents and said, Mom, Dad, I want to be a pilot. And they said, that's awesome. We're so excited for you. You need to get a job.
I see, because they pilot lessons, it turns out, cost money, which you may or may not have known in fifth grade.
Yeah, I had a pretty good idea that they cost money, but not that much. Yeah. And I was pretty low on the totem pole of kids, so
what'd you do?
Yeah, so my first idea was I grew up in Alabama, and my idea was to get pecans out of my neighbor's yards. Mm-hmm. And
would you do this legally, or were you sneaking around at night, or how did it work?
You know, that's a good question.
Okay. Well, I think the statute of limitations have expired,
yards,
so you're fine.
For sure.
Yeah. But these are the things that made, because they probably had pickers that got the most of them, and then you're getting what's on the ground.
Oh, no, this is just the neighborhood. This is like in our neighborhood. So I would just go into people's yards and get their pecans and then shuck them and sell them right back to them.
That's
so
great.
They all knew that I was raising money to buy flying lessons, so most of them paid a very good premium on those pecans, and I only had to pay my sister a quarter per pound. Yeah.
Had you ever thought of saying that you should also charge them a surcharge for cleaning their yards?
No, man.
Oh, man, you should have talked to me. I've got some other. So that's great. And you're also, but you're doing like babysitting, pet sitting, pet walking, right?
Yeah, so the word got out that I was trying to get enough money to fly, and so more and more people started hiring me. I tried to do everything I could.
Here's what happens to philanthropists who suddenly actually make money, people with good ideas about saving the world, and because they're poor mm-hmm. when they do this, and then they get money and they forget. Now, you didn't.
No. So, through a series of events, I started flying when I was 12 and got my license at 16.
Wait a minute, you started flying when you were 12?
Yeah.
Are there laws in Alabama about flying when you're 12?
Yes.
Is that legal?
Sure. Yeah. So you can start taking pilot license at any age, or pilot's lessons at any age, but you can't start soloing until you're 16.
Okay. So, and then did you?
Yep, I soloed at 16, and that got me in a lot of trouble in high school because very often I would go flying and forget to tell my parents. Who had the plane?
Yeah.
So I got to be good friends with the people at the small airport that I flew at. So I would take their planes, and I didn't have a cell phone, so sometimes I would get stuck in certain places and forget to call home.
Like, Mom, I'm in Scranton. I'll be home late.
Exactly. Or? One time I went to New York and got snowed in and didn't come home for 3 days.
See, we all thought it'd be cool to, like, know the guy who could drive in school, but she could actually fly you to New York in high school. That's kind of cool.
Not many other kids' moms would let them fly with me, though.
Well, apparently your parents didn't let you either. Didn't stop you. So here you go. But now talk more about when you got engaged in actually the fight against hunger.
Growing up, we traveled a lot. So I got to go to a lot of different places that I got to meet other children who were hungry. And it was crazy to me that these kids were born to families that love them and look so much like mine and just didn't have the money to make ends meet at the end of the month or very often by the middle of the month. Yeah. So I started to become really good friends with these kids, and we would do little things for the neighborhood where we would go and feed kids that didn't have food.
How would that work?
Well, I remember one kid I met. Her name was Samantha. She was Ecuadorian, and she and I would play soccer every day in this little barrio. And while the kids were playing soccer, I would always get winded because it was too high. So I would run home and get some rice and Kool-Aid and stuff, and we would pass out rice and Kool-Aid at the end of the soccer game.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of how it started, and we started dreaming about what if kids had stuff to eat every night and every single day, and that's kind of where...
And did you create a program right there in Ecuador that did that? Did you advance that project in Ecuador?
Well, I was eight, so
okay.
No.
That's pretty cool. Just getting that much done is awfully
but
good.
But later I did get involved in something with the World Food Program that did implement programs for kids there. It was called,
Was it Universities Fighting World Hunger?
It was called Universities Fighting World Hunger, but the program in Ecuador is slipping my mind. The idea behind that program was to put school feeding programs in place, so kids got free school lunches every day, and so now kids are eating every day. So that was something really neat that kind of harkened back to my childhood.
Well, tell us more about that, because you did get involved in that at the university level with the fight against hunger.
Yeah, so I went to Auburn University, and the United Nations went to Auburn and asked them to implement a program that engaged university students in the World Food Program. And the idea was to really engage the millennials to say, this is the very first generation that can end hunger long term. And which is really exciting. And it really doesn't matter what your passion is or what you're excited about, whether you're an engineering student or a teacher or a nurse, everybody has a role to play. So we worked with students from across the campus to engage them in different ways to end hunger.
Were you asking them to develop plans or just to participate in a plan that maybe the UN had already devised?
A little bit of both. So kids could get a degree and a hunger minor. They were also asked to do quite a bit of research around hunger, especially in fisheries, forestry, farming, things like that. And then we expanded to about 600, well, I was there, about 600 other universities, and it continues to grow. So universities all over the world are looking at how they can end hunger.
Then you got involved with the World Food Program as part of the UN more directly. Tell us about that.
So then I got a degree in public health and moved to West Africa, the Gambia, and continue to work on school feeding programs. The Gambia is a very small, very poor country that's Islamic, and a lot of the girls weren't going to school. They would stay home and work. So we worked with really closely with fathers and imams to convince them that they should be sending their girls to school. And we ended up bribing them a little bit. We would give them free school lunches. And then if a girl made it to school 15 days out of the month, then they got a 50-pound bag of rice to take home.
Did it work?
It worked, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So you're getting now, again, educating young women, and people are eating.
Yeah, and before that program, the average education in the Gambia was a first grade education.
Men and women?
Men and women.
Wow.
And every year we're seeing that tick up. So it's really exciting what simple programs can do.
Now, the political situation got fairly unstable, and you were in a lot of danger.
Yeah, I happened to be there during the Arab Spring. So all of that area was a little bit crazy. So quite a lot of people in the United Nations were targeted because they know that we have access to food and medical supplies and things like that. So, yeah, it wasn't always all that safe.
Well, you were kidnapped.
Just that once, yeah.
Maybe I could ask you to tell me about it.
Yeah. It was in the middle of the night. We kind of knew that it was coming because other people were being kidnapped. So I had quite a lot of training on what to do. I always slept with my cell phone and papers in my pockets. And when I heard the soldiers coming, I had UN security on speed dial. So I called my friend Hamlet and left my phone in my pocket. So when they were driving me, I was asking, why are you turning on this street? Why are you doing that, turning on that street? And of course they would tell me to be quiet, but Hamlet knew where we were going. So Hamlet met us at the place that he thought we were going.
Wow, you had the presence of mind actually to name the streets, because that could be risky. I mean, they might just figure out what you're doing.
Yep.
Yeah. But so what happened? Was it what was the confrontation like when they showed up? I'm assuming that the people who kidnapped you were armed.
I don't think so.
Oh, I see.
And that's the interesting thing about the Gambia is there's not a lot of firearms. The penalty for having a firearm is pretty high. Mm. So I think they had some knives and other rudimentary things. But this was kind of a ragtag group. Mm. It was a pretty amateur operation, so it's not really all that fair to say I was kidnapped.
Well, you were, and it certainly could have gotten worse. And obviously you are in harm's way, and you knew it. As you said, you were prepared, you were given precautions and warned. And that ended well. But how long did you stay then after that?
Not much longer. Things got worse and worse. And so eventually I decided to come to North Carolina and go to Duke and learn a little bit more about Islam and Arabic, and with every intention of going back. And I met a very cute boy who told me if I would just marry him and move to Greensboro, it would be the greatest adventure of my life. So
he's also the president of the Chamber of Commerce, but you didn't know that until later.
Well,
that's
a
great story. And yes, that's a joke. It's not true about the a great story, and one that gets repeated often. There are a lot of people here because their spouse says, no, you. And then you got here. Now, I'm guessing you didn't know much about North Carolina.
Nothing about North Carolina or Greensboro. So
now you're here. Tell us what you're doing now.
So one thing, when I moved to Greensboro, I was shocked to find out that Greensboro was the hungriest city in the United States. I had no idea, and selfishly was a little excited that I would have a job in something that I loved. I didn't have a job, so what I started doing is exactly what I would do in any country, and talking to everybody that had touched hunger in any kind of way. So I met with Cone Health System, I met with several family foundations, all of the nonprofits working in that area, Guilford County Schools, et cetera. And it came really clear that there's a lot of people doing incredible things, but don't have the capacity, don't have enough food to meet the need here. So we started brainstorming, and I met a man named Bob Biggerstaff, who had started a very small program called A Simple Gesture. And what A Simple Gesture does is ask people to fill up a bag of food. Every time they go to the grocery store, just pick up one extra item, put it in a bag, and leave it on their front porch. And a team of volunteers comes around, picks up the food, and delivers it directly to local food banks.
How do you recruit those people and get the word out?
So he had just gone to his church initially. And when I met with him, I thought we could really expand this, and he felt the same way. So what we've been doing is working with different churches, working with corporations, anywhere we can get an audience where we can tell people about this.
I'm curious to know what you thought, because obviously you got the spark for this idea working in foreign countries, Ecuador, the Gambia. You saw poverty, you saw hunger, and I'm guessing perhaps as an American you maybe expected it in those places. You were told what to expect. When you hear a statistic like Greensboro is the hungriest city in America, I mean, first of all, what does that mean? Start there. What does it mean to be the hungriest city in America?
Yeah, so we have a very large proportion, especially of our children, that don't eat on a regular basis or are skipping meals. So it actually means pretty similar to what I saw in Africa and Ecuador, that money kind of runs out at the end of the month, and then families have a hard time buying food. Another big problem in Greensboro is there's a lot of what we call food deserts. So people live too far away from grocery stores, so food just isn't accessible or affordable in Greensboro.
Tell me more about some of the systemic issues that you're involved with or that you've seen. And again, you can make a comparison. There's plenty of food in the world, and we've technologically, with genetically modified food, whether you like it or not, it produces a lot of food. And the promise was that if we can do all of this technological stuff, the world, you know, will be fed. And sure enough, the food now is there, and people are still hungry. And in America, hunger is getting actually worse and not better. Mm. What's going on?
Yeah, well, that's a really complicated question, but I'll try to answer it succinctly. So, first you asked about there's enough food in the world, but it's not getting to the right people. And that's so true, and it's the problem here in Greensboro. There's plenty of food in Greensboro, and there's just not access to food in certain places. Part of the problem is back to that food desert, that there's not enough grocery stores. But another problem is that people can't afford it when it is there. So I think there's a lot of different ways that you can approach poverty. And handing people food isn't a long-term viable thing. So we're working really carefully to make sure that we're building infrastructure in these different places as well. And that takes a lot of different partners, and it takes a long time. But we're working towards that. The other thing is we want to make sure that generationally people get out of poverty. And the quickest way to do that, one, is to set up a child with everything they need to do really well in school. And I think the most basic thing of that, one, is to take them to school, and two, is to feed them, to make sure that their brain is getting new information. If a child doesn't eat for a day, their brain literally can't learn new information for 2.5 days. So here in Greensboro, we have 50,000 students that don't eat on the weekend. So if you don't eat for 2 days, your whole week is kind of shot. So I think, one, just feeding kids is a way to set them up to learn in school. The second thing that you need to get a child out of poverty is a really good track to a good job, whether that's through technical training or college. And one thing I'm really excited about here in Greensboro is the Say Yes to Education program, which helps families that can't afford to send their kids to college. I'm gonna get this wrong, so I'm gonna say it as simple as possible. It pays for kids to go to college, basically.
How many people are you serving? Because you say a simple gesture tries to fill that gap. What do we do on the weekends? What do we do over holidays and mm-hmm. summer vacation, that sort of thing? How many families now are engaged, and how broad is your network of support to bring food to these families?
Yeah, so we started in 2015 with about 200 families giving food on their porch, and we're up to about 2,800 families leaving food on their porch, and 40 corporations that people bring a bag to work and we pick it up. And we don't actually distribute the food. We take it directly to local food banks, places like Backpack Beginnings and Out of the Garden, Greensboro Urban Ministry. And we have 5 other pantries that are in High Point that we support. And then they distribute it. And it's been amazing because we've collected a little over 300,000 pounds of food, which has been they've been able to think more sustainably about how they're going to give food out. They're not always constantly thinking about where it's going to come. So we just made an agreement with Guilford County Schools that we are going to put a food pantry or a backpack program into every single school in Guilford County over the next 3 years.
Wow. Congratulations. We've got a link to your website at our website, stateofthings.org. Leslie Isikoff is the executive director of A Simple Gesture in Greensboro. Thank you, Leslie. Great work. Just ahead, a ghost story about a woman who is invisible, and then there's the natural and the supernatural world coming together. You'll hear about it on The State of Things, but first, the music of Greensboro-based artist Bo James.
If I came back into your life again, Would you still call me one of your closest friends? 'Cause I've been gone. Yeah, I went away. And I've been changing.